Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So we're hitting November, so there's going to be a few movie releases now. And then, of course, December, January is going to come, so that's when we're going to have a lot of the big holiday releases and a lot of the big Oscar-worthy releases, if you will. So it's going to be movie season. Are there any movies like in the next, let's say, month that you're looking forward to see other than Wakanda Forever? Like, obviously, we all want to see that one.
I don't know. This is tough. I'm not excited to see Avatar. Was it The Way of Water? But, I mean, I'll watch it if people want to watch it. I think that. I did see this trailer. Have you seen it? I think it's called... Oh, no, I can't remember. Oh, it's called Spirited. It's Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell. And it's like a... What is it? A Christmas Carol kind of story. Will Ferrell plays a new ghost of present. And Ryan Reynolds...
Gotcha.
First, like, time doing it. And, you know, hilarity, like, happens. So, that looks good. It's an Apple TV movie, though, so... Or Apple Plus, whatever that thing is called.
Yeah, Apple Plus. I have not. Now I'm going to have to check out the trailer when we're done here, because I have not heard about that, but it does sound interesting. Obviously, I want to see Black Panther Wakanda Forever when it comes out. You know, I'm the same way about the new Avatar film. I'm not excited. Maybe it will be a very good movie. Who knows? When it was still hot. Like now... Remember, a big thing that made Avatar really popular the first time was not the story. That story's been rehashed 100,000 times. Like, people always joke that it's essentially Pocahontas or Fern Gully or Dances with Wolves. But it was the early days of, like, this modern 3D era, 3D film era. And James Cameron did things that were just never before seen graphically at that point in time, and I think that was the big draw to the film, not necessarily the content. And I don't know if he's going to be able to up his game even higher than that nowadays. And we've seen so many different forms of CGI, 3D CGI, both good and bad. So I don't know. I you know what? Maybe it will be a great movie. Maybe it won't be, but I'm skeptical.
I was very like, I still am like whatever to it, but I'm more leaning towards it because now that I know Sigourney Weaver's in it, which I'm like, like Sigourney Weaver, but she's not playing the same character.
Okay. Huh.
Is what I think is happening. I think she's playing like one of the water avatar because it's two different avatar groups. It's the water group and then the everywhere else group, I guess. And isn't this just like Black Panther? Like, we have the Atlanteans or whatever they're going to be called. And I wonder if they're still Atlanteans
or not. Oh, that is a good question.
I thought they were going to change it, but we have the water people and then we have the Wakandans. I feel like you were saying, this story's been done, like, to death.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I agree. The story, even at the time when it first came out, the story wasn't that novel. It was not a novel story at all. It was pretty much just Fern Gully or Dances with Wolves in space. It wasn't, there was nothing like unique about it. It's in terms of a storytelling part, except for the fact that there was like a lot of sci-fi. It was all the fact that everything was happening on Pandora and you had all this 3D graphics that we've never seen before in our life that was making it amazing.
Yeah, but I don't know what other movies are. I do want to see that horror Winnie the Pooh movie. You know, it got green. They're making a sequel.
Of course they are.
So now I want to see it. Now that I know that we'll get another one, I'm like, okay, I'm down.
One thing that I am interested in seeing, and we'll see if it's good or not. Speaking about like copyright sending and whatnot, we actually are getting two Pinocchio films this year, one made by Guillermo del Toro and one made by Disney. The Disney one's already come out, and I haven't seen it, but I heard it was pretty terrible. But I'm actually, I actually think Guillermo del Toro might make a good one, so I'm actually looking forward to seeing that version of Pinocchio.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The Disney one was okay. Do we need a spooky Pinocchio?
I mean, the original one was pretty spooky. Not even the movie, but just like the source material is spooky in itself. And that's why I kind of think it might be a little scary. But now that I think about it, like the original one was Nightmare Fuel 2.
Yeah, I love mostly everything that Guillermo del Toro. Is this originally directed by him, or is this like a produce?
I think he's the director.
Okay, then I'll definitely, if it's in theaters, I'll go see it.
It looks like, who's on that? I think it looks like Ewan McGregor's in there and Finn Wolfhard, which maybe I'm alone in this, but I just like to call Finn Wolfhard, he's essentially store brand Timothy Chalamet.
I definitely thought he was going to have a bigger career than he ended up having.
He got in a few movies after Stranger Things, like he was in It and It Chapter 2 and whatnot. But yeah, he didn't get nearly as much. His career did not rock. Or he was in the Ghostbusters sequel or requel, whatever they want to call it. But he kind of had a secondary role in that film. Like for the girl was pretty much the main character, his sister. But yeah, I feel like he's just like, he's discount Timothy Chalamet. Like, oh, we need to get a young, long haired, lanky white guy. Oh, we don't have the budget for Timothy Chalamet. Call Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah. I mean, he's not as good as Timothy Chalamet. I guess it's like one of those things where it's like, you saw it online versus how you got it in person.
Yeah.
But, yeah, none of those... Man, I was really... I don't think any of those Stranger Things kids really, like, blew up from it.
Millie Bobby Brown seems to be doing all right.
I mean, Netflix-wise.
She's like... Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, she's had a few films. She was in the Godzilla movies, which was fine.
I mean, okay.
And she was in Enola Holmes, for whatever it's worth.
Which is Netflix.
Fair. I mean, and what's the other girl? Is her name Sadie or something? The girl who
she's going to be in something, I think, coming up.
Yeah, I feel like she has definitely been like in Netflix hell for a while. Like she was in that Fear Street 1994, whatever it was called. But I feel like she's going places too.
Oh,
and then
she's in The Whale, I believe. Yeah, she's in The Whale with Brendan Fraser.
Mm.
And that's getting a lot of Oscar buzz. So... I think
she's yes. I have not seen it yet, but I have heard it was really good, and people have been talking about how great it is. So I need to, and then like maybe both, but two of the older boys I think are doing pretty well too. The one of them I think is doing better than the other because one of them was in that New Mutants movie that didn't do so great, but the other one was in that Ryan Reynolds film New Guy, which was a good film.
New Guy.
Or not new guy, free guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're talking about... Yeah, I just thought... I don't know. Maybe it's just how Hollywood works. I thought everyone was going to, like, blow up from Stranger Things. Or I feel like everyone waited too long to get deals, if that makes sense.
Maybe.
And, I mean... New Mutants is a good deal, except... That movie took 80,000 years to get released.
Yeah. Well, One of my favorite things I joke about often is how, what's it called? I always joke about how I think Terminator is a franchise that kills careers. Because look at all the people who were supposed to be big and that you thought would take off, who'd starred in the Terminator films, who never moved further. Like, remember when they wanted to make Jai Courtney a thing? And his career kind of stalled after Terminator Genesis. Same thing with Sam Worthington in Terminator Salvation.
Well, now we got... Now he's coming out in Avatar. He's in the number one grossing movie of all time. I don't know.
That's true, I guess. I find it funny that what's-her-face, Zoe Saldana, is in like two of the three top grossing films of all time.
Yeah, Endgame and Avatar.
Yep.
And both, she's playing a blue and a green person.
Exactly. In both, she's playing a person in like either CG or makeup.
Yeah.
Like, we never actually get to see her. There's a lot of people that I feel like were supposed to be big, and I don't know whether if they just screwed up their career by because of how they were, just Hollywood was not ready for them. Like, there's some that I think totally screwed up their career, but I think they also had mental health issues. Like, I remember like in the late 2000s where almost every film had Shia LaBeouf in it.
Yeah. But I always heard he was difficult to work with. Or that's at least what the Even Stevens girl says.
And then I feel like in the early 2010s, they were trying to make Joseph Gordon-Levitt happen, and he was like in every other film. And then all of a sudden, we don't see him in anything anymore.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, but I think it's good for Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like, because I do think he's a really good actor. And I think now he's like, I don't need to be in everything. I kind of just do what's good for me. You know, the things I've seen him in recently are like, I've been like, that's pretty good. Like, he was in Looper. I love Looper.
I thought it was good.
Where he plays young Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's good. I don't know what other movies he's... I think he does a voice in something, though. But...
He might, but I feel like we haven't seen anything from him since, like, 2015. And it's funny, because, like, when he first came out, it was kind of, or when he first, like, reappeared, because he was on Third Rock from the Sun in the 90s. And then, like, he just kind of vanished. And then all of a sudden, he reappeared and was, like, popular.
One, two, three. He's got two movies in post, one in pre-production. He's got two announced movies. Oh, no, that's just a voice. Oh, yeah, he was Jiminy Cricket in the Pinocchio movie.
Well, that was apropos. Yeah, he was in Snowden, which wasn't that great.
The Trial of the Chicago 7 I enjoyed.
Okay, yes, that one was a good one. He was in Project Power, which... I don't know if I'd call it a good or... it was an enjoyable movie. I wouldn't say it was a great movie. That was that Jamie Foxx film on Netflix where, like, they take a pill and it temporarily gives you superpowers.
Yeah. Oh, man, what else? Yeah, I mean, he's done a lot of good things.
Maybe he can play somebody in the King of the Hill reboot.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, he's already doing some voiceover work, so maybe he can do that.
Yeah.
Let's talk today about Peggy's Headache, which is season 3, episode 3. So we're doing dual threes today. So, you know how I always talk about how I love the early season episodes, or early series episodes, rather. So this is definitely one of them. It's morning on Rainy Street. Peggy's in her robe. And she goes out to get the paper from the lawn, and she sees Dale leaving the house, and he, in his very paranoid way, he has to lock like 3 or 4 locks before he leaves. And Peggy's like, "Morning, Dale." And as Dale's leaving, John Redcorn pulls up, and he's getting ready to go into the house, and, you know, he's just kind of like, "Oh, hello." And Dale's like, hi, and Dale's dumb, and he leaves and drives away, and John Redcorn walks up and starts unlocking all the doors, so clearly he has keys to the house, and Peggy's like, oh, morning, John Redcorn, and he's like, hi, Peggy, I am dropping off some ginkgo biloba for Nancy's headaches, and Peggy's like, oh, okay, cool, and I heard that's a very good thing, and Peggy goes back inside, and then John Redcorn draws the blinds, and you hear Can't Get Enough of Your Love playing, so of course we know what's happening. We go back to the Hills kitchen, and Peggy's reading the newspaper, and Hank's like, oh, you must be reading Doyle Harcavy. Doyle Harcavy, I guess, is like the, he has a musings column in the paper, and he's been, for I don't know how many years, but he's been writing it, and everybody enjoys it, and he's like, oh, nothing wakes me up better than a cup of coffee. Children's are a blessing, but mine's are holy terrors. And then they read that Doyle Harcavy is retiring, and it's like, what? No, he looks like he's gonna quit and write product descriptions now, which I don't know. I guess it makes sense if he's a writer. Luann's like, hey, you should try out to be the new Doyle Harcavy. You should get a musings column. And Hank's like, oh, you know, Peggy is amusing every once in a while, but Doyle Harcavy's a musing machine. And Peggy's like, I can come up with a bunch of musings. People are always saying I'm creative. And Hank's like, okay, cool, make one right now. And Peggy's like, okay, I like milk. And Bobby's like, hey, that's the best so far. We kind of cut to a semi-montage of Peggy working on multiple musings, and she's writing a bunch of ideas on paper, like as if she's writing bad jokes or something. She writes down weather, young people, the old days as topics that she can cover. She takes some BC headache power because all the stuff is giving her a headache, having to deal with this, so her head's hurting. And she's writing it down. We just see that she's just crossed out a bunch of musings that she did not find funny. And Hank comes in and says, hey, why don't you try out some of me? And Peggy's like, I can't get this work done with you coming in every 2 hours asking me how I'm doing. I'm going to Nancy's. Peggy runs up to Nancy's, knocks on the door, and Nancy doesn't answer. You hear the loud music playing because, you know, John Redcorn and Nancy are getting it on. And Peggy enters the house, heads towards the bedroom, but she's yelling, Nancy, where are you? And she opens the door, but right as like they throw their clothes on and whatever, and Peggy sits down, and it's obvious that she's oblivious. She has no idea what's going on. And she's mentioning the headache that she has. Like, I just had to get out of that house. Hank's just bothering me, and I've got such a headache. He's like, oh, wait, John Redcorn, you're a new age healer. You can help me with a headache. He's like, yes, I could. That would, that's my job. So Peggy makes an appointment and leaves, and Redcorn's like, that was awkward, but Nancy's like, oh, I don't think Peggy knows. She just has such a trusting personality. I feel really dirty now. I'm going to take a shower. And John Redcorn's like, I'll join you. I do find it funny how naive Peggy is, because like all the signs are there. Like for the average person to like, all the signs are there. That's, to me, it's the obvious thing. It's just how Peggy can't catch on to it has always made me laugh.
I mean, Peggy never have seen the obvious. Peggy sees what... I mean, Peggy lives in her own world, right?
True, that is a common thing. She does live in her own world. But, yeah, it's just funny because she wants to do this musings column, which she's not really that funny of a person, but... You know, good for her for putting herself out there and trying. But then it's clear that she's, like, struggling to do it. I don't know. I find it funny that she's wanting to do something that she just doesn't know how to do. But, hey, you know, at least she's trying.
I mean, Peggy's never been stopped by not knowing how to do something. I don't think Peggy thinks there's anything she doesn't know how to do.
Yeah, it's true. I think she is very, very, very overconfident. For whatever reason. We go to John Redcorn's trailer, and Peggy's super nervous. I honestly don't know why, but Peggy's super nervous, and she's like, oh, I didn't realize that you had a carpet. I don't know what I was expecting. And, you know, John Redcorn's like, sit here. And it's in one of those, like, you know, massage chairs or whatnot. Peggy's like, oh, well, this is perfect because I never know where to put my head when I sit. And it's like, oh, that's John Redcorn's like, thanks. It's from Brookstone. And John Redcorn's being really professional while Peggy's being really nervous. And he turns off the lights. He puts on like the noises of kind of like the white noise of dolphins. And he's like, the dolphins sing songs of love and sorrow, like Leanne Rimes. And as John Redcorn starts massaging, like, Peggy finally relaxes, drops her glasses, practically just passes out. And John Redcorn puts Peggy on the couch and says, okay, you just relax here while I copy both sides of your insurance card. In the alley, Bill says that she is going to have a hard time replacing Doyle Harcavy. I mean, look at his picture. He never ages, which I'm guessing that they just use the same picture for 10 years. That's why. Hank's like, yeah, but she's getting a lot of headaches working on this. And Dale's like, oh, those headaches are as good as gone. Peggy went to John Redcorn for healing. And Bill and Boomhauer are concerned about this. And Hank is a little bit too, but it's like they don't want to make a big deal out of it because then they don't want Dale to kind of catch on that there might be something wrong with John Redcorn. So Hank tries to play it coy and just like, oh, I gotta go check on something. At the old house, Peggy comes in singing, and Hank is concerned that dinner is going to be late. And she's like, oh, I just had a great headache session with John Redcorn. And Hank's like, okay, great, your headache's gone, so I guess you won't be going back. It's like, oh, no, that was great. I'm going to have to keep coming back. And Hank's like, I don't know. I just don't understand the connection between rubbing your neck and the head. And Peggy comes up with a musing. It's like, I just came up with a musing. My husband calls me his better half because I better have his dinner on the table. Then Luann learns that Peggy was at John Redcorn, and even Luann knows, and she's like, and then Peggy says, yeah, that's why dinner's going to be late. And then Bobby gasps. So, yeah, I just find it funny that, again, everybody knows what's going on except for Peggy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. And then I guess they all know that Peggy doesn't know, because they all kind of skirt around the whole, like, well, if Peggy knew, she wouldn't go, I guess this is the thing.
Or at the very least, she'd understand why Hank was concerned, I think. Because I think she'd be like, oh, I have no interest in sleeping with John Redcorn or something.
I mean, the musing is okay, though. I might not be familiar with musings. This music, just, are they supposed to be sad?
I don't know. Like, it's not like I sit and read musings myself. I think they're just supposed to be kind of funny, random thoughts that are supposed to make you chuckle.
Yeah, I don't know about this. I mean, she's got something. She's, like, on the right track. I just think that this is, like, it doesn't make me laugh. It just makes me, like, oh.
Yeah, that is kind of it seems like an antiquated one. We see Hank drive up to John Redcorn. John Redcorn meets him at the doorstep, and it's like, Hank, would you like a beer? And it's funny because Hank's like, this isn't a social call, but Hank takes the beer and opens it anyway. And then John Redcorn's like, I know what you want, Hank. Peggy came here with a headache, a real headache. Her head actually hurt. And Hank's like, I know, but that's exactly how it started with Nancy, wasn't it? And John Redcorn's like, oh, don't worry. I won't heal your wife the same way I've healed the wives of others. And Hank's like, you better not, because if you do, I'll kick your ass. And then it kind of shows us both the men in profile. And, you know, John Redcorn has a good at least 2 or 3 inches on him. And he looks, and he's like built, whereas Hank is kind of, you know, a little pudgy and whatever. And Hank's like, I will. Hank goes back home, and Peggy and Nancy are just jumping up and down in the lawn because Peggy's happy because she got the job. And Hank's like, oh, great, you got the job. No more John Redcorn. And Peggy's like, are you kidding me? I need to see him more often now because I'm going to have a lot of headaches. And Hank's like, oh, no, let me give you a massage. You don't need to see John Redcorn. And he gives like a really bad massage. Like, he's just randomly hitting and rubbing places. And Peggy's like, what do you have against John Redcourt? I looked him up. He's cheaper than acupuncturists. He's like, you know what John Redcorn does to his customers? Like, do you think he's ripping me off? Do you think he's a quack? He's like, or is like his stuff's not that effective? He's like, no, he's very effective. And Hank wants to tell Peggy without actually telling Peggy. He's like, you know, Nancy, John Redcorn, Joseph. And Peggy looks out the window, sees John Redcorn, Nancy, and Joseph, and looks at John Redcorn, looks at Joseph, looks at John Redcorn, looks at Joseph, realizes that Joseph looks a lot like John Redcorn, and she finally pieces it all together. We return from the break. Peggy throws away all of the like the aromatherapy and massage stuff that John Redcorn gave her to take home. And Peggy's upset that Hank never told her, and Hank's like, I thought you knew. I mean, look at Joseph. Where do you think he came from? And Peggy's like, Nancy told me that Dale had a Jamaican grandmother. And, you know, Peggy's like, oh, no, does Dale know? And Hank's like, oh, no, he's just as slow as you are. But, like, in a naive, trusting kind of way. Peggy walks out to confront Nancy. And he's like, Joseph's not Jamaican, and neither is Dale. And I'm starting to suspect that neither is his grandmother. And then Nancy's like, oh, so you find out. And Peggy's like, I bet you don't even have headaches anymore. And then Peggy kind of runs back into the house and is like, and you, how come you've never told Dale, your best friend? And she's like, oh, you know, you're just learning this. You're going to get used to it. And Peggy's like, the only thing I want to get used to is a cold glass of lemonade. And then she grabs her musings pen and writes down. She's like, I'm still a journalist. Bobby smells the garbage for the day. And she's like, hey, does anybody smell today's garbage? Because he's smelling all the aromatherapy stuff. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. Peggy falling for the Jamaican grandma thing kind of makes me very sad.
Or maybe she just wanted to believe it so much that she decided to.
Yeah, I guess more that she, that's a good point. Maybe she really didn't want to believe that, you know, Nancy was sleeping around on Dale. So she's like, oh, yeah, Jamaican grandma. That makes total sense.
Because aren't they friends, like, from high school?
Nancy and Peggy? I don't think so.
Because there's an episode where, like, Nancy gets that job in Dallas or Fort Worth or whatever. And then Peggy is like, remember the Nancy in high school? Like, she would never take this.
Then I guess she does.
So I just wonder if them knowing each other for some, well, that's very interesting that like Peggy and Nancy knew each other in high school and Dale and Hank knew each other. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's common in like some of those small towns. I know like my uncle and aunt and all my uncles, for example, have a lot of the same friends from when they were growing up because they all kind of stayed in the same town. So,
but, yeah, maybe she just really wanted to believe the best.
Probably. I just like how she goes on like DEFCON 1 or whatever the minute she figures out everything and runs into the sliding door because she's so angry that she wants to confront Nancy that she's not paying attention. Yeah, I feel bad for Peggy because she's just so upset. Like, her whole world's been rocked. But then I also just like, how can you not know? Like, all the signs were there. I don't know. But the next morning, we see kind of a repeat of what happened at the beginning of the episode. We see Dale getting ready to leave, and Peggy's out getting the paper, and she's like, morning, Dale. And under her breath, she's like, you poor, poor man. And then John Redcorn comes up, and then Peggy's like, well, John Redcorn. Oh, hi, Peggy. Well, well, John Redcorn. Peggy Hill. Peggy goes over to Min to kind of talk about everything. And Peggy's like, I just had to talk to somebody about the affair. And Min's like, oh no, Nancy's cheating on John Redcorn. And Peggy's like, you already knew. And Min's like, oh, it took me about an hour to figure out, but I'm naive and trusting. And Min's like, wait, you didn't know? Peggy Hill didn't know. Oh, I got an email con. We cut to Bill's house, and they're drinking instead of in the alley or in the back of Bill's house. They're drinking in the front of Bill's house, and it's just Bill Boomhauer and Hank Drinken, and Hank's kind of like, oh, you know, I'm kind of concerned that the three of us have known about Nancy and Dale, but Dale doesn't know. And Bill pretends like he's in denial, like, what? Nancy's cheating? I don't believe it. They have a fairy tale marriage. And then Boomhauer just kind of has this kind of laissez-faire, don't rock the boat kind of mindset. Back at the Hill House, Dale's like, I can't find the other guys, and asks Peggy where they are. And Peggy is trying to be super nice to Dale because she feels sorry for him. It's like, oh, you know, we don't get to talk much. You know, Nancy doesn't appreciate you. Do you want to come in for a piece of pie? And Dale's not interested. In the alley, we see Bill, and Dale walks up to Bill and is like, I think Peggy's in love with me and wants to leave Hank. And then Bill does the whole thing. I don't believe it. Do you have they have a fairy book marriage or fairy tale marriage? Oh, gosh. I really feel bad because Peggy, it's clear that like Peggy's the only one who doesn't know. There's even an earlier episode that kind of hints that even Bobby kind of knows. Because, what is it, in season one, there's an episode, the one with the ants, where they find a queen ant, and Joseph's like, that ant looks like the one on the top of my dad's, van, and then Bobby says, you mean Dale Gribble? So Joseph's like, yeah, my dad. So it kind of seems to hint that even Bobby knows. But yeah, I feel for Peggy, and then she's wanting to be super nice to Dale because she feels sorry that for, 14-15 years, he hasn't known that this has been going on. But, you know, I guess it comes off weird to Dale that she's hitting on him.
Yeah.
Peggy's back at home. She's struggling to come up with musings. And, like, the Luann and Bobby are listening, and they're not interested in all of them, and she's like, oh, even Doyle Harcavy had hard times. Doyle Harcavy, everybody calls him that. Yeah, I think he's overrated. And then Bobby's like, thank you, Mom. Of course coffee wakes you up in the morning. That's how they advertise it. They go to a ball game, and Hank's like, you know, I think the problem is that, you know, you're just new to it, but it takes you about a while. And once you get to know it, it's going to, you know, it's going to get better. You know, I try to block it out by thinking about other things like sports. You can think about Boggle. John Redcorn goes up to bat, and Dale is saying a bunch of baseball terms that come out as double entendres that are making Peggy uncomfortable. Like, oh, John Redcorn can swing. This guy never strikes out. He's going to score again. He's going all the way. And Peggy leaves. Hank goes to check on her. It's like, oh, ballpark nachos. You just rent them. You don't buy them. And Peggy's like, oh, man, I can't live with this lie. I rose-colored glasses are broken, and the world's ugly and flesh-colored. You know, Hank's like, well, you know, it takes two to talk about it, and everybody else knows about it and has known about it. It's not interested. And Peggy's like, actually, I could think of somebody who doesn't know about it. And Hank's kind of concerned because Hank knows where this is probably going. Peggy says she's going to tell Dale, and Hank tries to stop him, and says, you know, just let sleeping dogs lie. And Peggy's like, dogs don't tell lies, only people lie. They lie like dogs, which gives her a musing idea. We're back in Hank's garage, and he's sanding something. Dale approaches, and he's like, I gotta tell you something important. And so Hank is like, oh, I can't hear you, I'm sanding. And so Dale unplugs the sander, and then as Dale starts talking, Hank pulls a hammer and just starts randomly hammering on a board. Dale's saying, I think your wife is in love with me and wants to leave. And Hank's like, well, you're a good friend for telling me that. Hey, if the shoe were on the other foot, would you want to know? And Dale's like, yeah, all right, Nancy likes her men thin and lanky. The newspaper gets delivered, and we hear a voiceover about how Peggy is tired about, you know, sleeping dogs lie, letting sleeping dogs lie. We all know about somebody who's cheating on their spouse, and yet we all keep quiet about it. Well, not this reporter. Peggy is back at home, and she's getting ready to go out and tell Dale. Nancy tries to stop her, and she's like, you know, I like Dale, but in a lights off kind of way. And Peggy's like, if you don't tell him, I'm going to. And Nancy's like, I won't. So Peggy's like, get out of the way. Peggy approaches Dale and is trying to like break the story and whatever. And it's like, did you hear read my column today? And it's like, you know, the one about the dogs. And she's like, oh, did somebody kill your dogs? Like, no, I'm just here to tell you that, you know, Nancy is not the wife you think she is, and John Redcourt isn't the friend you think it is. And Dale's like, oh, you think Nancy and John Redcourt did something to your dog? And then Nancy's like, no, I'm trying to say that Nancy and John Redcourt. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Joseph appears like, Dad, I'm bored. It's like, oh, well, what do you want to do? I don't know. Me and Bobby want to rent Encino Man. And Dale's like, huh, Brendan Fraser comedy. I approve. All right, here is $2. Or not $2, but like $2 $5 bills. And then Joseph's like, thanks, Dad. And then Dale's like, oh, wait, here's another $5. Go get yourself some milk balls. And he's like, thanks, Dad. And then he leaves. And then Peggy just has this realization that she can't break up the family. So she tries to divert. It's like, Dale's like, okay, so what did you have to tell me? That Vikings were the first people to the moon. And Dale's like, well, everybody knows that. That's why we name our ships after them. And Peggy's like, oh, right, yeah. And then Dale tells Peggy, he's like, hey, you have a good husband. He doesn't have the best body on the block, but he's got a good head. And Peggy's like, thanks for it. She goes back to the garage, and Hank's like, so did you tell her? And Peggy's like, I couldn't. And, you know, they, Peggy's like, I know. And Hank's like, some things are just best unsaid. And they kind of tepidly apologize to each other. It's like, Hank, yeah, I know. Peggy, yeah, I know. Cool, okay, so pepperoni it is then. And then it kind of zooms in on Lady Bird sleeping, so kind of the letting the sleeping dogs lie mindset, and the episode ends. So I'm still kind of on the fence. I understand why the episode ended that way. Like, for story purposes, it had to end that way, because that was a good portion of the series is the affair that they have. But at the same time, it's just like, gosh, I wish Peggy would have told him.
Really? I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. Do you think that's a tough one? Because is it like your place to tell someone, or?
I don't know. So this is my thought. Maybe I'm wrong here. I feel like if you have the knowledge, like, the first thing you should do is try to encourage the other person to fess up. But then I feel like if you don't, I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to think of it from my perspective. If like my friend knew for years that my significant other was cheating on me and just never told me, I'd probably be pretty upset when I did find out.
Yeah, but then that's not like, I don't know. It's a really tough situation, but I don't think it's Peggy's place to do it, you know?
I guess you're right. I mean, I could appreciate that thought. Like, that, yes, it's not her place to actually do it, maybe. It's Nancy's job.
And then it also feels like Peggy inserting herself into the story, you know? Like, everything seems so harmonious now. Like, and it's just like, now I must disrupt this. Not that there was any deal between like Nancy and Dale and John Redcorn. It's just like, well, they found this perfect balance. And I don't know if, man, this is really tough. These are real life situations in King of the Hill.
There is a fan theory out there that states that Dale has always known. But he just pretends that he doesn't. And I guess that kind of makes sense, because on one hand, like, for somebody, well, one, all the signs are there. Like, it's super obvious to anybody with, like, two brain cells. But on the flip side, also, like, as for a guy who is, like, in the weeds on conspiracy theories as much as Dale does, for him to, like, miss something that obvious and whatnot, it just seems out of character. So there's a fan theory that he knows. But, you know, it's kind of established in other episodes that Dale doesn't make a living wage and Nancy pretty much pays for everything. So Dale just kind of pretends not to know, just to keep the peace and keep living the life that he does, where he gets to just do whatever he wants during the day and Nancy pays the bills. There's also the theory that, like, that is the ultimate revenge for him, is that he gets to raise someone else's son, the son of the guy who cheated on him, or cheated on with his wife, so.
I don't think that's real, like, because when you see Dale, first of all, Dale's not the brightest. Second, like, true. Dale is truly in love with Nancy. Like, there's no spitefulness in this at all, and I don't know. I just think about the episode where he has to get the job because, like, he can't breathe in any more poison. And, like, in that part, like, that, like, Nancy loves Dale. Like, she doesn't want anything bad to happen to him. I guess it's just, like, this other part of them that she needs fulfilled.
I mean, I guess. I don't know. I guess she does. I think at the same time, she probably doesn't want to break up her family, and that's why she kind of just lets things go.
I don't know. I do really. I mean, you don't think that she really loves Dale? Like,
I think she does. I'll give you that. I think she does.
Like, what was that? We're not, because I don't think we're doing it. The one where Dale gets in the lawsuit with the cigarette company, and he has to keep, like, making fun of Nancy, and it really, it really hurts her. If she didn't love Dale, that wouldn't bother her.
Good point. You do bring up a good point.
So I think it's just this physical aspect. And I mean, we learn more into it later on in the series of truly why Nancy needs the headaches therapy.
Well, even Hank mentions that, like, she originally went to him just because she did actually have headaches. And then John Redcorn kind of suggests that this is actually kind of a common thing for him. He does, because he is probably one of the better looking people, as we established in the previous episode, one of the better looking people in the neighborhood, if not the city. So he probably doesn't have a problem with the women, and I don't know. That's kind of sleazy too, because he kind of acknowledges that he's helped a lot of women cheat.
But again, I don't know. I always have this philosophy, like, it's not John Redcorn's fault. He's the single guy in this situation. Like, these people know what they're getting into. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like when, like, a woman gets angry at her husband's, like, mistress. It's not the mistress's fault. She's just, like, there.
I agree a little bit, and I also disagree. Like, I think at some point, if you know that somebody is married or whatnot, you should, in your head, you should be like, okay, this person's, like, off limits. I shouldn't be trying to get with them.
I guess. I just think, like, everyone's an adult. Like, you get to make your own decision, you know?
True.
You know, they should know better, you know? If it's like, if you're on a diet, you don't go to a candy store, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It always upset me, this whole thing.
Which, on Redcorn?
Yeah, just the whole cheating thing. I mean, I get it. It's narrative. And I don't know, for all we know, maybe that was like the neighborhood thing that was going on when Mike Judge was growing up, and he's just kind of relaying his own life. But still.
I do wish they would have. I mean, it would have been nice if they had another kid. Though then, I don't know. Then Dale might really figure it out.
If the two of them had another, yeah. Like, I probably would stop feeling bad for him at this place.
I mean, this is a very conflicting episode. I don't know where I put it on my list, but I do enjoy how much they all care about Dale in this. Like, it's not about Nancy, really, this episode. And for me, it's not about Nancy. It's not about the affair. It's more about how everyone's trying to protect Dale.
Yeah, I think that's really what it is. Like, I think that is an astute observation. I don't think that they don't tell Dale, not because they don't care, but because they don't want to, like, wreck his life by pointing that out. And they probably also know that Dale's not the most stable person on the planet, so they don't want to, like, set him off either.
Though, maybe they don't want another Bill. Like,
good point.
We already have Bill.
That's true. We don't need two sad bachelors in the neighborhood. But I don't know. I mean, eventually everything changes. I think we might cover that episode. But realistically, I love the episode itself. I've just always had a problem with the resolution to it.
Yeah, because it doesn't really go anywhere. It ends where began. I guess just Peggy knows, but everything else kind of we go back to, what is that thing where you always have to end up at the beginning again in some shows where nothing really changes?
Yeah, because even we, the audience, by this point know that they're cheating.
Yeah, we've all seen Joseph.
So yeah, it is a little weird, but I guess we get to see. I guess one thing it does do is it kind of, in an indirect way, answers why nobody tells Dale anything. Because you can kind of tell, it's the same reason why Peggy ultimately didn't tell, is she saw how great of a dad Dale was to Joseph, and she knew that if she said something, she'll probably tear that family apart, and she just didn't want to be the cause for that to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what everybody else is doing too. It's we don't, if we do say something, that marriage is going to fall. It's, even if it's shaky, it kind of in a very, very bizarre way works, because Dale doesn't know and he's happy, ignorance is bliss kind of thing. And, he's taking good care of his kid and he's doing all the responsible stuff for the most part and stuff. So let's not rock the boat. I don't know. I honestly don't know what I'd do in that decision, I don't know what I would do in that situation myself personally. I'd like to think that I would tell, but at the same time, I don't know if I'd want to be the one to break up a family. So
I wouldn't say anything other than I act surprised when it happens.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, that's all I have on this episode. What about you?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything else to add.
Cool. Well, next time we're actually going to be doing a two-parter, Hanky Panky and High Anxiety. They're two-parters, but they're also kind of separate in the sense that, I guess it does end on a cliffhanger, but they're also two pretty decently contained episodes. But we will be doing both of them. We'll be doing them separately too, just kind of in the same vein as the actual show. So look forward to catching on that one. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.